Hi everyone, and welcome to the Private Market Show brought to you by Let's Venture and Money Control. Here we talk about the nuances of investing into India's private markets, where the underlying asset is actually innovative technology, new markets, and good old enterprise. Investing in private markets is actually about investing in startups, and this can take many manifestations, all of which we will uncover and deep dive into our show. I'm your host, Shanti Mohan, co-founder and CEO of Let's Venture. Let's Venture was founded in 2013 with the vision of making early stage investing easy for both founders and investors. On the show today, we have Abhishek Nag, Director of Business Development at Netflix. Interestingly, Abhishek was always fond of the internet from childhood and its potential to create large scalable businesses. He has previously worked with Hike, Facebook, and Uber. Abhishek actively invests into the private markets via his personal syndicate called Luminaire Capital and also runs the ISB Alumni Private Syndicate.
Early stage investments, there are only two credible signals. The first is the founders. That's, I think, mostly art. The second is the market. That's, I think, can be a fair bit of science, right? If you choose it to be. So founder and market are the biggest credible signals. So if it's a large market, extremely strong founders, something great can be born out of it.
Without further ado, let's hear how Abhishek thinks of investing into private markets. Thanks, Abhishek, for taking the time out. So let me start by asking you, what motivated you to be an angel investor? Because when you look at your track record, right, you have worked with some of the best organizations, some of the best startups. And angel investing is, as I see, a natural extension of what you have been doing in the last decade. But just to understand a little bit more, why become an angel investor?
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate you inviting me to this. So, it's a very personal story for me. So I born in 1983 and I was in my teens in the 90s. And that's when I first got access to the internet in India. And, my dad was in the army. So we moved all around the country. But when I had access to the internet, suddenly I was chatting with people from all over the world on IRC. For those of us who are old enough, you'll probably remember IRC. I felt this sense of connection with people all around. And then through message boards, I was suddenly learning about everything that was going on in the world. And I learned about companies like Amazon and Netflix, and they were getting founded in the late 90s. And there was the dot-com bubble. Now, we remember the dot-com bubble in hindsight as a bad thing financially, and it was for a lot of people. But it was also a very inspiring time for, young teenagers like me in India to look at all of the things that were happening on the internet. And that's where it also became clear that India would see its own internet wave, right? And so I knew from very early on that I wanted to be a part of the internet industry in some way, but the opportunities were fairly limited. So I went to undergrad engineering, worked at a high-tech company for 5 years. But throughout this, so the internet itch was there. And eventually, I decided that I needed to do something to go find my way into the industry. And so I went to B school, because when you don't know what you want to do professionally, you go to B school. That's what I did. I went to ISB, fantastic year there. And then at the end of it, by that time, companies like Google, Facebook, Amazon were setting up substantial presences in India. So it also ended up being a good time from that point of view. And, that's how I landed up at Facebook. But, apart from my professional journey at Facebook, Uber, Hike, Messenger, now Netflix, the India internet story was also playing out, right? So this was the time when you could order a book on Flipkart. And if you got a book on Flipkart, you talked about it with your friends. You said, you told them that, hey, I got this book, which I couldn't find anywhere. And I ordered it on the internet. They asked me for my credit card number, and suddenly this book showed up. Right. So people talked about things like those. And then connecting with your city and discovering restaurants through Zomato, which was called Foodie Bay back then. Right? Things like those were happening. So we had some early signs of how big technology and the internet were going to be in consumers' lives. And often I would get drawn into these debates where people would say, oh, you know, how can these companies survive? You know, they're not sustainable. You know, to go IPO, they have to be profitable. How is that going to work? So I don't think it's a thing. And I was on the other side of the debate. I had just had this extreme optimism about the market and these founders and these products. And that's sort of where I think the germ of angel investing began, is eventually I realized that, look, you know, it's pointless getting in these debates and trying to prove that you're right. It's best to put your money, you know, where you think you're right. And then there's no better proof than when these companies do well and you do well financially and you get to play a small role. So that's sort of the germ of the idea, right? But the opportunity, the concrete opportunity then presented itself in 2016, where I just moved out of Uber and joined Hike Messenger. And I got a call from Vijay, who is the co-founder at MyGate. Vijay and Shreyans were my classmates in business school. And Vijay called to bounce this idea off, because I was one of the few people he knew in the internet industry who had worked at some of these companies. So he was like, hey, so we are building this. What do you think? Do you think companies will value this, the time savings? And, you know, do you think users will value this? How can we grow? And so we ended up having a fantastic conversation that lasted many hours. And at the end of that conversation, I just asked Vijay. I asked him, are you looking to raise? And he said, yes, as it turns out, we are. We need to seed the first few security guards that we will serve with smartphones. And back in 2016, smartphones were not as widespread as they are today. And so for that, we need some capital. So I was like, I would love to come on board. And that's where the journey started. So I think the itch began when I was a teenager, well into sort of when I was a working professional. The opportunity finally presented itself in 2016. And that's how I made my first angel investment. I had no idea how these contracts worked. I had some academic understanding of different kinds of asset classes, equity versus convertible notes, and so on from my finance classes. But I never negotiated an investment contract. And that's something I sort of learned along the way. But that's how it all began, to your original question.
No, it's very interesting, Abhishek, because you were an internet kind of child, right? Almost like the person who saw internet emerge in India. And I think with your background in some of these very credible companies, that's what gives you the access to some of the best founders sometimes, right? So when I hear your story, right, you tell us that, you know, I actually helped him work through the idea and then I asked him whether I can invest, right? It's not like, okay, let me invest first. Let me first get a piece of the pie before I start helping you. And I think that does not work in angel investing, right? You have to always give before you can get from founders.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think founders, obviously, equity is precious at the earliest stages of a company. Founders obviously know that well. So they want to give it to people who bring something. Some people will bring legitimacy to a company, right? Yeah. So even if they're not involved, if they're invested, other investors believe that, oh, okay, if person X is involved, then maybe they see something and that's good enough. That's a strong enough signal.
Yes.
Other people, bring operational expertise, like somebody who's got decades of experience in banking to a fintech company. So, I think what I have tried to do is in all of my investments, I've tried to ask that question, people ask about, okay, so what are the investment criteria? One of my investment criteria tends to be is how can I help this company? And sometimes I've let investment opportunities go because there was no clear way. Sometimes there are companies that have just so much momentum that even if you know you can't help them, you want to be involved. But I try to ask myself that question every time is, what role can I play? And, there are many roles that angel investors can play.
Yes. So I would love to ask the next question. You know, how do you justify to yourself when you see a very high momentum startup and you want to be part of that startup, and what are the different roles you can actually play? Kind of just extending that question.
Sure. So, you know, the so most of my experience, personal experience, has been on partnerships and building businesses for consumer internet companies.
Yeah.
So some of the things I understand well is how to grow early on, what a good product experience looks like, and what gets it to come together.
Yes.
How you can use partnerships effectively in your go-to-market strategy are some of the things I understand well. Beyond that, so those are some concrete ways in which I try and help founders early on and try and help them through, okay, you know, so who's your priority audience, and, you know, what is it that you're building for them that will make them take notice, and more than take notice, what is it that will get them to talk? Over time, I've also tried and, you know, developed expertise around how content marketing and building communities plays a role in growing consumer companies. So that's something I try to always help companies with. The other thing is that I have had the privilege of is almost all the places that I've worked at have had fantastic cultures. Culture has been a huge focus. And at Facebook, at Netflix, at Uber, at Hike Messenger, all of these places. So I've learned a lot from by working with leaders here on sort of the importance of taking what is in the founder's mind, because really the culture in a company is born from there, right? It's in some ways the extension of the of how the founding teams think, high-performing teams work together. So taking that out of the founder's mind, codifying it, and then scaling it within the organization. So I try and help with some of that. And, you know, oftentimes, without naming names, founders just need a friend who will just bring positive energy no matter what they're going for. You know?
I completely agree with that.
Somebody who will just host them for chai and pakoda, you know, at their home in the evening, no matter what is going on.
So, and just be non-judgmental about where they are in their journey, right? I think that is so important.
Exactly. And, you know, I try to be that person too, as much as I can, because founders deal with enough negativity and, you know, enough disappointments and emotional upheavals every day anyway.
Yes.
So, sometimes they just need that other friend.
No, I love what you say, Abhishek, because it is so true, right? Beyond just trying to talk about domain and trying to talk about building a company, I think the softer elements of entrepreneurship, where you can find an angel investor into whom you can confide, right? Who can be like an unconditional sounding board to you without kind of saying this is right or wrong. I think it becomes very important from the entrepreneur's perspective. That's so right. love to hear that perspective from you. But just from, you know, my gate to today, my gate in 2016, you said, right? To today in 2021, the last 5 years, how has that journey of angel investing been for you?
So, you know, I think a lot of angel investing is about access.
Yes.
And so for anyone who's starting angel investing today, I think there's obviously the way where you think of it as an asset class and you invest on platforms like Let's Venture, AngelList, and so on. That's one way you can start. It's honestly the easier part because you'll get tremendous quality deals on all of these platforms today. And you don't have to necessarily worry about access. So that's the easier part. But for somebody else who's a sucker for punishment the way some of us are, and want to source these deals, and want to work with entrepreneurs, and want to learn, and, you know, so on. And there are many reasons why those may make sense for somebody. Access is everything, right? So for me, my access started through the networks at work and the networks at the places I'd studied it. So sort of my first degree network. Because I was somebody who loved to engage in debates about, you know, where the world is going, where India is going, where technology is going, and, you know, so on. I always made it a point to stay in touch with the people who I had the most enriching debates with. I still do that, right? So, you know, and that's where some of the first few deals came, right? It's these people who I stayed in touch with, some of the sharpest minds at some of the places I'd worked with and studied at, and who I remember enjoying conversations with and staying in touch with, that's where the first few deals came. Like Sai and Shubh at Mobile Premier League were my colleagues at Hype Messenger. Right? Vijay and Shreyans at MyGate were my classmates at ISP. So a lot of it started like that. Then over time, as the sort of number of companies in the portfolio starts growing, hopefully if you're doing something well, people start talking about it. So founders start referring other founders, people in your extended professional network know you do this. So if they know someone who's starting, they tell you, hey, go to this person. Over time, as as I started syndicating deals, I started talking about these companies a little more. As I started talking about my portfolio a little more, I started getting an organic inflow, right? Of people just reaching out saying, hey, I know you're an angel investor. Would you like to take a look at my company? So that's how it starts building organically. There's some other people who do some things really well. They're great at publishing content, for instance, which is very helpful to early stage founders. I haven't figured out a great way to do that yet, but that's another way. If you're great at writing things down and publishing them or publishing a podcast, that's a great way to source deals, because someone realizes that, you know, you're the best person they see around them on funnel management for, B2B SaaS businesses, because you write so much about it. If that's the business they're building, they will reach out to you. So that's maybe another way, which is so far a missed opportunity for me.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting, saying that, you know, how do you kind of look at your expertise, start writing about it so that you can share knowledge. But it comes back to the first point, which we talked about, Abhishek, is first give back.
I think yes. You've got to create the value first before yes. You get anything out of it.
Yes, yes. So you spoke about syndicates, Abhishek, right? So talk to us about syndicates, because I think, you know, while we appreciate that, you know, you have to put yourself out, I think it is still a very crowded space today. The internet is noisy. Our lives are noisy. How do I cut through the noise, right? And that might be difficult for some people, right? Yeah. I think then the syndicate becomes a great way to start to participate in deals. But talk to us about, you know, syndicates. What do you see the future of syndicates in the next 5 years?
Look, the traditional VC fund model is, I think, getting unbundled in some ways, right? And I think the traditional VC funds also realize and acknowledge that. So I think what syndicates give is much greater flexibility to entrepreneurs, the investment leads, as well as the people co-investing. And that's a great thing that'll bring a number of more people into all of these different things. So more entrepreneurs will be able to raise seed funding, more lead investors will be able to write big checks through sort of the pooling of capital, and more people who think of angel investing just as an asset class will be able to jump in. Traditionally, the industry was very access driven. You needed to have a certain net worth, and then a fund would approach you and invite you, and then you would invest in them. All of that breaks down through the syndicate model. So that's why it's a wonderful thing. For me personally, the reasons I started syndicating were twofold. One is I realized that, there was tremendous value in writing bigger checks at the pre-seed and seed stage.
Yes.
Bigger than my personal ability to write checks. And the syndicate gave me a way to do that. It allowed me to take early bets, earlier than even some of the seed funds would take. Like sometimes you just know that that's what we as angels do, right? We are hopeful about people.
Yes.
And so when you know that, okay, I know this person, I've known them really well, and I know whatever they do is going to be great. Sometimes it just starts with that, right? And sometimes you want to write a check at that stage. The syndicate allows you to do that where nobody else will. So that's one. And through syndicates, I've also participated in great deals. So that's worked to my advantage as well. There are many other things that I wish we could do in India. The rolling fund is one thing that I wish we could do more easily. Investing cross-border is something I wish we could do more easily. So I'm looking forward to all the things Let's Venture does on those fronts.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Abhishek. So, you know, it is very interesting how you kind of explain syndicates, because when I was hearing you, you were more talking from the founder perspective, right?
Yeah.
And I think you're tuned to kind of think from the founder perspective.
That's
but
right.
Talk to me about an investor who wants to now join your syndicate, right? What does he need to do? How do you curate your syndicate? How do you give access? Just talk about investor management and investor behavior on your syndicate.
Yeah. So today all of the people who have joined my syndicate have joined because, you know, there was a deal which I was then talking about with my close network. And then the close network was then talking about to their first degree connections and that sort of how. That's most of how the syndicate got built. So again, it's been very organic in some sense. So I think key to the ability to build a successful syndicate is the lead storytelling ability, right?
Yeah.
If you're able to tell the story of what you stand for, tell the story of what a specific investment opportunity or company stands for, that's when people come, they join, and they want to invest. So that's been core to how I've built my syndicate so far. But, you know, again, I haven't told these stories by publishing them broadly. It's still been within networks because that's what I'm more comfortable doing. But I do, like I said, you know, I understand that's a missed opportunity for me.
Yes, yes, yes. So, you know, but if I were to look at my syndicate, right, and if I were to ask you, have you rejected investors who've come to your syndicate, or have you kind of sent out, like, what are the good behavior protocols when you're participating in a syndicate? Have you tried to do that? Because at times, I think everybody is good when things are going good, right? I think the real color comes out when the startup starts to do badly, and then there is a lot more resentment, a lot more angst among the participating investors. So have you seen any of that play out, Abhishek?
Not yet. I'm sure I will in the future.
Okay.
So I don't have any lessons, honestly, on that front.
What would be your not to do as an investor on a syndicate? Like, what would be saying that do not do this if you come to a syndicate?
I think breaching confidentiality is probably at the top of the list for me.
Okay.
I think core to the syndicate proposition, like we talked about how syndicates are great in many ways.
Yes.
But one of the things that's new with syndicates is at that earlier stage, far more, you know, people are getting access to what a company is building.
Yes.
And sort of their pitch deck than ever before, right? Back, you know, 10 years back, if a company was raising at the pre-seed, seed, series A, series B, not more than a dozen people would probably look at their pitch deck. Today, it's like hundreds of people are potentially looking at the pitch deck. I think that's one of the things I worry about. And I haven't had any issues so far, but that's sort of, it's one of those things that I think everyone needs to be a little mindful of. So confidentiality is at the top of the list. The second is, I would love LPs who give me feedback constantly, not just the things that are going well, but also the constructive feedback. Because look, as lead investors, we are not perfect either. And I'm sure there's, you know, tremendous wisdom in the LP network. So LPs who are engaged, who are saying, hey, what's going on with that? Hey, I can help with that. Hey, I noticed that, you know, that thing that company X did, they can do better. So then I am happy to put the LPs in touch with the founders directly if they can add value. And founders, as you know, also appreciate feedback. So
yes,
that's sort of second is engaged LPs are great. You know, a lot of people say, oh, how do you manage all of that communication? But I am absolutely fine. Send me all the feedback.
Yeah, yeah. So when you talk about your syndicate, right, Abhishek, it almost feels like you're talking about your personal, maybe like a fund concept, right? Where you're kind of starting to construct that bigger picture of how you could work with founders. But what is the decision making which happens through your syndicate, right? Do you have like an advisory board or how have you structured the syndicate? And do you have people who help you in the decision-making process, or is it just an infrastructure which anybody can come and use as being part of the syndicate?
I have two different kinds of syndicates today. One is the, my personal syndicate, and that is sort of the latter kind of syndicate, right? Where it's usually me sourcing the deals and I'm you know, sort of putting them on the syndicate, people are co-investing. There's a second syndicate that we are just in the process of launching with Let's Venture, as you know, which is the ISB alumni sort of investing vehicle.
Yes.
And over there, we are far more organized. So, you know, we have an investing committee. We have experts in different domains. So we have almost handpicked a key set of people on that syndicate, people who span sort of finance and, you know, building consumer brands and, you know, with lots of investing experience and so on and so forth. So over there, there's an investing committee and then a bunch of people can source deals and, you know, there's a process through which we look at deals and so on. So it spans the spectrum. When it's just my syndicate, you know, there's more degrees of freedom. When it's the sort of Atrium Angels, which is the ISB syndicate, we have some of these bodies in place.
I heard you earlier saying that, you know, at the end of the day, we are betting on people.
That's right.
But beyond people, right? What is it and what is the decision-making process when you start to evaluate a startup? That is one question. And the second is that how much of that is art and science?
Early stage investments, there are only two credible signals. The first is the founders. That's, I think, mostly art. The second is the market. That's, I think, can be a fair bit of science, right? If you choose it to be. So founder and market are the biggest credible signals. So if it's a large market, extremely strong founders, something great can be born out of it. So it starts from there. Then the next level of questions is, so what's the problem at which these founders are starting? And it's important for, I think, everyone to remember that where a company starts is not where they eventually end up. You know, they may pivot, they will grow, become many different things. I take the example of Flipkart again. They start selling books. Today, they are much more, right? So I think it's important to remember that when you're thinking about the market and the problem that the founders are solving. The third is, what's going to set these founders or this product apart, right? Is it going to be that the founders have an inordinate ability to raise capital, which is tell their story better than anyone else? Is it that the founders have figured out how to build a community of loving users around their brand who will talk passionately about the product? Is it that? Is it that the founding team can ship features really fast, iterate and learn, right, better than anyone else? Is it that, you know, they have some core technology IP, which is just impossible for someone else to build in the sort of time that these guys will take to build? So I think understanding why this team will win, solving whatever problem they are in the market. And so that's the third one. Then the fourth one is, in what way will I be useful if I'm a part of this journey, right? So, and then the final one is, what do my exit options look like? Because an IPO is not a reasonable outcome to expect in India.
Yes.
So what does that look like? And, you know, fast forward to say 7-8 years, what is that going to look like? Often you'll find very high quality companies, much loved products in completely new markets. Founders are brilliant. You want to use the product, but you don't necessarily see how it's a company where you can exit the investment ever, right? Because the company will generate cash, but maybe they're not a venture scale business. So that's important too. So that's sort of my checklist, if you will.
Well, that's really well articulated, Abhishek. Just to kind of stay on this curation process, have you seen any biases which are very inherent in the ecosystem today in how we look at founders, right? Or are there any biases which founders are fighting to Absolutely. Kind of go build great companies?
Absolutely. There are tons of biases. There's you know, resume abbreviation bias for sure.
Right? Yes.
There's that. Then there's a bias for how founders present themselves. I often keep hearing investors talk about, oh, I didn't get a sense of energy from the founders. And I'm like, what does that mean? What does
yes.
that mean? You know, I didn't sense hustle. I was like, what does that mean? And how does that impact the day-to-day running of this business? And have you actually worked with this person to know how impactful they'll be. So there's that bias for sure. I think extroverted, well-spoken people who seem energetic are much more likely to get funded than, not. Men are definitely much more likely to get funded than women in India.
Yes.
I think, people who are comfortable speaking English versus not, there's a bias there. So there are many biases. And I can't wait to find those founders who have been at the negative end of some of those biases, because that's opportunity. What anyone else is not seeing is what's opportunity. So these biases do need to get solved for sure.
You've literally taken it away from me, because I feel it sometimes when I look at some of the founders. You can see them really brilliant, but you can see that veil of bias. You know that, which I have coined for myself now, I call it the founder investor fit, right? They do not have the founder investor fit, right? Yeah. And invariably, you have to have the eye to identify those founders, bring them out. And if we are able to create enough success stories out of that negative founder investor fit, I think we will start to prove that biases may not be good for angel investing.
Absolutely. Right?
Because that is not giving equal opportunity to people to go build businesses. Because you already are saying that you are going to start from 5 feet back than your other counterpart who has an advantage of the additional, space between you and him.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Yes.
So, there's a lot of work to be done. I think the big moment for us will be when a lot of founders themselves start investing.
Because, yes.
Then you'll have a diverse crew who are great at identifying, early signals of success. And the early signals of success don't necessarily need to fall into these molds that we have just described.
Yes. So now just going back to that question, which you kind of alluded to earlier on about exits, right? Because, when you look at, you could be part of a very good, profitable company, but you could have no way to exit, right? Or you could be part of a company which is completely burning cash, but you can see your exit down the path.
Yeah.
How should an angel investor look at exit? And if you get an opportunity to exit at that point of time, how should you create your exit thesis around companies?
Yeah. Look, I have a very simple way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
Angel investing or early stage private investing is an extremely risky asset class. So, you are never going to be right.
Yes.
Because the companies that, 9 out of 10 companies eventually don't do well. So, but somebody invests. So clearly those are, in hindsight, they won't be right decisions. The 1 out of 10 company that does great, you could always argue that you should have invested more. So you're never going to be right. You're also never going to be right around timings on exit, right?
Yes.
So for me, I think, usually I look to exit at like a series B or C. That's when, the really serious growth capital starts coming in and, these investors can meaningfully influence the companies towards the next stage of growth. My influence on the company or the founders, by that time, I think it's more or less done. I don't think the founders need angels necessarily. They may be nice and they may continue to give angels allocations, but they don't necessarily need individuals anymore. They're now building institutions.
Yes. Right,
with institutional support. And also, to me, it's like, look, I took that risk early on. I need to make sure that, I'm compensated for it. And further risk is not okay. If I take money off the table, I can invest it in more companies in the pre-seed and seed stage, which is what I do well. So for me, the ideal exit is a Series C exit. That's roughly what I look for.
So when you talk about Series C exit, do you exit completely? Do you do a partial exit? How do you take that call?
It depends on what sort of momentum is expected in the company in the future. More often than not, it's been a full exit. And also more often than not, the institutions coming in don't give you that choice to stay on.
Yes.
So in some sense, it more often than not ends up being a full exit.
So just to kind of close this, right, I would love to hear what does a typical day for Abhishek look like? Because, you know, you've been working with companies, large companies, you hold large responsibilities there. And we know that working with founders can be equally draining, right? Especially when you're working with so many people, right? And you start to get emotionally vested with founders, right? So tell me, how does your typical day look like? And where do you find, or how do you allocate time to kind of work with founders and startups?
Yeah, it just takes ruthless prioritization, which, you know, there's no perfect state for. So yes, there's always something I can do better. But I think that's sort of what it takes. But the days tend to be full with what I do at Netflix. I love what I do at Netflix tremendously. So the days tend to be get filled with some of that work. And then this is what I end up doing on the evenings and often the weekends. Which is why, if you remember, when we started chatting, I was like, travel is so important because yes, that's what life's like, right? It's these 3 month sprints where you're working so hard and then you're taking a 7 to 10 day break where you're doing nothing, right? So, and that's not happened during the lockdown. But I think ruthless prioritization, trying to work the evenings, sometimes on Saturdays, is how it all comes together.
And as a closing note, you know, what would be your kind of message to founders who are now starting up, and you know, how should they look at Abhishek and how should they look at your syndicate?
Yeah, I think there's no better time to start. There is more capital than ever available at the pre-seed and seed stage. You know, it may seem like a daunting process, you know, creating a pitch deck. That's not the founder's core job. The founder's core job is building whatever they're building, right? So, yes. But, you know, I have seen the community of angel investors and, you know, seed stage and institutional capital investors have a lot more empathy today than, you know, ever before. So, found, you know, investors also understand that, that, you know, you don't have to be perfect. People are more than willing to spend time with you, understanding, talking through the idea, brainstorming. So your pitch deck doesn't need to be perfect. Just, you know, pick up that phone or send that email. And, you know, even if it's very early, I know a lot of investors who would engage and work with you on sort of that early creation process, right? So don't be daunted by what the journey is ahead. Capital raising is an important part of being a successful company, but it doesn't have to be what founders spend all their time on.
No, thank you, Abhishek. This was wonderful talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. No, this was fun. Thank you for inviting.
That's it in this very candid conversation with Abhishek. If you have a suggestion or feedback, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. We'll be back next week with yet another insightful episode. Have a good week.